You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of October 28th, 2020. And today it's Ghosts and Goombas.
Man, what a mashup that would immediately get destroyed by Nintendo's lawyers on the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And this week, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about video games.
Finally.
The games we're playing. Finally. You know what?
595 episodes in, we're finally getting around to the main theme here.
We've gotten to video games. It's the spookiest week of the year.
It is.
Well, maybe the second spookiest week of the year. In the United States, the first spookiest week of the year is next week.
Yeah, exactly. Tuesday is the spookiest. I mean, that's, yeah, do, oh, God. I don't want to think about it.
Sorry. Yeah. Too soon, too real. But we'll talk a little bit about, George has been playing some spooktacular games.
I have been
stuck playing some not spooktacular games, although the person I'm playing with tends to get scared at games, so we can talk about that a little bit.
Interesting.
And then we'll do a quick couple updates on some of the things that we've been playing too.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think we should start off with the Super Mario Brothers story you told me, because I'm fascinated by this. We have not talked about this before the show.
That is true.
So my understanding is you have finally, this is like showing Star Wars, right? For the first time.
Yeah.
You had Sam play the original Super Mario Brothers.
You got to see where we're coming. People, it's a fucking pandemic. And people with children, it has been just 10 months
desperate
of
times.
A constant hellscape of trying to figure out what to do with your children. If you're on the West Coast in the United States, it's been even crazier because there's been just now we've had the first sustained week of air that is healthy to breathe.
Yep.
Like this is the first week, I think, that we've gone a full week not dipping into any sort of health advisory for breathing the air here.
Yep.
Since August. And so we have been stuck inside.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, if there's ever a time to introduce the magic of video games to a child, now is the time.
So give our listeners some backdrop here. How old is Sam? And if not now, when was the ideal time? Like, because this is a question that we've kind of talked about on the podcast before.
Yeah.
But like, when you're thinking about the education of video games, and you know, you and I, we've been thinking about games for a long time.
Yes.
And there's certain games that are fundamental to our experiences that naturally you would want to share with the child.
Yeah.
But when those come in their life matters. Because if you introduce them too young and they don't get it, they might be turned off forever. If you introduce it too old, it's no longer interesting because it's not the flashy new games that they might be used to by this point in their life.
Yes, definitely. I mean, that is the biggest problem I have is I learned quickly, I didn't learn it, but I basically relearned that modern games, while I would say on the whole more user friendly than old games in terms of telling you the rules, forgiving in terms of difficulty, explaining the game to you and the controls and such, but to get to that point I think is actually much more complex because so many games are three-dimensional now, and that assumes that you can basically do two things at once. You can move a camera, or move and you know, see something in 3D space and know depth, which is actually surprisingly hard when you introduce it to someone who has never played a video game before and doesn't have great motor skills to begin with. You know,
it's really unfortunate because every time that I've tried to teach Nicole how to play a game or tried to get her to try something, the two biggest challenges by far is understanding movement, especially first person movement in a 3D environment. The second is just response time, that like pressing the button has the response, and if you wait too long, it'll be too late. Like there's that sort of mechanical skill. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we started because we were playing Animal Crossing. Mm-hmm. And I think Hannah or I was playing it or something, and Sam was interested. And I was like, okay, well, actually, even though I kind of want to burn this game to the ground, this is actually a pretty forgiving game to understand three-dimensional movement, because there are literally no stakes in that game.
Yeah.
You know, you're just kind of walking around slowly. You are tapping on things. I guess you could miss a bug or a fish, but like it comes back a few minutes later.
You can get swarmed by bees if you're not too careful.
That's true. Especially like, I feel like they patched out most of the bees, because I feel like I haven't gotten stung by a bee in, you know, like after month two.
Now's the time to revisit Animal Crossing.
That is true. There's like a spooktacular Animal Crossing thing that will get back to our Halloween talk. So I started with Animal Crossing just to kind of give him a sense of what it means to just move a character around in a 3D space. And then what else? We were looking at a couple others.
A short hike, you said, right?
A short hike. Yes, that was another great one, because that was even, I would say that's more complicated than Animal Crossing, because it's 3D, but there's also a vertical element of flying to it. So like it's on all three axes, even in the polygonal space. And then I was like, man, what else can I play that is fun to play for me, but also, accessible? And then I landed on Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker, which actually is pretty good. There's also like a bubbling mechanic, so that and Sam completely knows how to bubble. So if there's ever something that he's just like, nah, I don't want to deal with this, you know, there's an out for him.
I wish I had that in my fucking day-to-day life.
I mean, yeah,
I don't want to be in this meeting. Boop. Boop.
But then if the person you're linked to is also in that meeting, then you're stuck.
Yeah, and then I'm stuck.
And then after that, I mean, I did not know how deep that game was, but I mean, we have really mined that game. I mean, we are going into like optional objectives, you know, bonus areas, things that I definitely didn't play the first time around. And so I was like, okay, what else? And there was a little bonus area inside of Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker that basically showed you the controls. It's like, here's how to move around, here's how to move the stage around and so forth. And they set it on a little diorama of level 1-1 of Super Mario Brothers. And I was telling Sam, well, that picture in the background is actually kind of what started this whole thing. So like Captain Toad is part of Super Mario, and it's part of a story of Super Mario, and he's a character in it, and that's a different game. And I was like, do you want to play that game? And he's
like, oh man, that's so cool.
Like, he's like, okay. And I was like, sweet. Thanks to the magic of the Nintendo Switch paid Prime Plus, whatever they call it. Yep. I'm able to just jump into the menu and fire up the NES virtual console, and just dive right into Super Mario Brothers. And it was interesting because I think it was actually good that he had seen Captain Toad before, because I was explaining to him, look, what's that block? He's like, question mark. And I was like, yeah. And look what happens when we hit it. And then a coin pops out. It's like, oh, okay. Like I kind of know the grammar of this game already.
The same language is spoken throughout.
Exactly.
We
hit another block, and then a 1-Up mushroom popped out. And I was like, Sam, what's that? He's like, a green mushroom, 1-Up. And I was like, yeah, that's how you do it. And so then I basically, it's still hard to move and jump at the same time. But he started to understand I started by like having my hand on the controller and just his hand on the button. And so I was like, okay, Sam, get ready and jump. So I was like steering and he was jumping. And then eventually he started like kind of picking it up a little bit more. Still difficult. I mean, those old games are difficult. Like they don't hold your hand as much as newer games, but I feel like there's something more accessible to a two-dimensional space when you are not super knowledgeable about the form, you know?
Right. So did it seem to come naturally to him?
Yeah. I mean, he got it pretty quick because he understands, you know, he understands the logic of like, okay, you have to jump over things. He understands the logic of things that like will hit you and, you know, what do we call it? Poke. Everything pokes you. Or it's like, that turtle's going to poke us. Or like that.
Oh. Like to explain like why you're taking damage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so he understands that. He understands that if you jump on someone's head, that will remove them from the play field.
Yeah.
He understands.
True to life.
Yeah, exactly. Same deal as in real life. And yep. So like it was interesting because it brought into perspective how much the grammar of the Nintendo universe has remained constant over the decades. Mm-hmm. And then by extension, how much the grammar of video games is actually pretty translatable from game to game.
Did you get a sense that he missed the graphical fidelity of a modern Mario game?
He called it...
He's like, what is this ugly shit, Dad?
He called it fuzzy.
That's fair.
That other game's kind of fuzzy. And I was like, kind of, Sam. I was like, you know how they made that? It's like, they have little squares, and then they put the little squares together. And if you have enough little squares, it starts to look like a bigger picture. And I was like kind of explaining to
him. How pixels work?
Yeah, I mean, like, because we kind of do a similar thing with like his blocks or whatever. We're like, if you make a block puzzle, you can make a smiling face out of it as long as you have enough little blocks. You just have to zoom out far enough, you know?
Yep, yeah.
And then he was like, it looks fuzzy. And he was like, maybe it was raining. was
like, yeah, maybe.
Like, maybe it was just wet. I don't know. We did do a water level, and he got through that one okay. So
did he like the water level?
That was definitely one where I was doing the steering, and I was like, Sam, all you have to do is, like, do the paddling. So, like, press B, you know, or press A whenever we need to, like, swim up or down, because I was like,
right.
I'm not going to ruin my child's love of video games with this water level.
With the water level. Yeah. You gotta I guess they're wading into that, right? Slowly.
Wade into that water level.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was, like I said, it's cool and rewarding, and I'm glad that I kind of did it the way I did, because he needed that. I think he needed something a little bit more photorealistic at first just to kind of get it and then abstract it out from there. But I think it opens up the door to do a lot more interesting things and like different games. And like, you know, the idea that games can look different is something that I now really want to work on, because, you know, games can look a lot different from each other. And that doesn't necessarily mean one is better or worse, but I don't want to get into one of those things where it's like, and I feel like maybe we were all like this when we were kids, but like, oh, black and white movie, boring, sucks. Yep. You know, don't want to do that. You know, like I definitely want to try to temper that as much as I can, even though I know I won't 100% be successful.
It's always interesting to hear people talk about how they guide their kids into a world of entertainment. Yeah. The Star Wars example is one we use a lot because it's the classic example, and there's good movies in that franchise and bad ones. And it's an interesting challenge. But I think the lesson is kind of similar between Star Wars and Super Mario Brothers, right? Yeah. Which is, you know, you and I found video games at a young age, and we each have our own games that was our in, right? Like for me, it was Jackal on the NES. But for a lot of other people, it was an entirely different game. Yeah. The same is true for a lot of other geeky fandoms, right? Some people might have fallen in love with Star Wars. For others, maybe with Star Trek. For others, you know, who knows? Another sort of entry into that space. And it's really easy to think, well, because I had this experience, this is something that's universal. Yeah. But a lot of it really is just kind of luck, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think about how you guide someone into that path, because you can see how there are all these roadblocks or challenges that someone might face when entering the world of video games, and how kind of like weird, because by thinking about how you're going to onboard someone into that space in a way, or like when is the right moment to introduce them to concepts or ideas that are in video games, you kind of see how actually challenging how challenging it is to bring someone into it, really, and how lucky we are that we just sort of fell into it, and now we speak that language.
Well, we were also lucky in that we are of an age where we basically started playing. We grew up alongside the second generation of video games. Like, there was the big crash in the early 80s, and then Nintendo basically revitalized video games in the United States, and that's right around when we were born. And so we basically got to live the second generation of video games in a linear fashion, whereas now there will never be another crash. Like, there will always be video games. Like, there will never be a hard reboot of the industry in the way there was when we were growing up. And so Sam and his whole generation will need to learn by kind of playing games in clusters versus a line.
Yeah.
Because there's no going back to a space where you can grow up alongside video games and the medium. You'll need to learn it all at once.
Yeah.
So that's something that I think about a lot too, in terms of like trying to expose him to like clusters of types of games, because it's a fool's errand to try to teach him linearly, because there's just so many. And the other thing is, we grew up in households where we were the video game players, not our parents. And so there was fewer video games to go around. Like, you got a handful of video games a year, and like, you know, my kids are going to be growing up in a place where there's a handful of video games a month, or maybe or maybe even a week, you know. God,
you kids do not know how lucky you are.
And so it's not going to be one of those things where it's like, cool, you got this for Christmas, I hope you like it, because it's going to be what you're playing for the rest of the year, you know. And so they're just going to have to.
But Scott, how are they going to fall in love with like 100 hour JRPGs if they can play multiple games?
I mean, that's I am very fascinated to see where that even goes, because, you know, there could be a thing. It would be so fun to, and you know, everyone has high hopes of interacting with their children with the things they love, but like, it would be so fun to play through Earthbound with my children. I mean, who knows? They'll probably hate it or whatever and break my heart, but like, there's at least the there's at least the potential for that, you know?
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I'm gonna try it again tomorrow. He tends to get obsessed with video games, like a single game, you know, where it's like, no, I'm just gonna play this, you know, like, I'm just gonna, like, for 2 months straight, it was like nothing but Labo every single day. And so now it's like nothing but Captain Toad every single day. So I'm gonna try to kind of subtly try to work in more of the, you know, the ancillary games that have influenced the games that he's playing.
I mean, the other crazy thing, and maybe not to be like too nerdy or like patting you on the back here, but I also think there's a really important life lesson, right? Like, and again, I do not mean to be like to talk about you playing Super Mario Brothers as some sort of
Father of the Year is what
Father of the Year award, or like number one dad mug is coming in the mail, Scott. But I think there is something important about identifying parallels between the things that you're interacting with.
Yeah.
That is a skill that you can apply when you're reading the news, right? Yep. And creating this like historical legacy and being able to look back at how things influence one another. If you want to understand how things today have these historical parallels through time, and how ideas evolve through time.
Yeah.
You can start teaching that in a variety of ways well before they get to, you know, AP government classes and have to start thinking about this for essays, you know, like it's just a practice of like, what is this thing? What are its roots? And what are the, you know, what is, like you said, what is the grammar that carries through line through history? And that's something that I do think is a really valuable lesson. Even outside of video games, you can bring that with you to entertainment, but you can also bring that with you to politics or the day-to-day systems you interact with.
I mean, yeah, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I would hope that my kids have a working knowledge of the great mythologies of the world. You know, I would like them to
Kratos,
understand
Mario.
The Bible, and I would like them to understand Batman, you know, because like you just have to see those parallels. Because they're everywhere, you know, it's just, we just are these pattern-based creatures that are always creating the same pattern, but just a slight twist on it. And once you start cluing into that, the world just is that much more interesting.
For sure. And it's also empowering and inspirational to think of the way that the things that you create fit within that larger engagement and that larger conversation, right? Like, it's what you and I do this podcast for, you know? It's our own little way of, like, interacting with that legacy, the ongoing legacy that is the medium that we happen to love.
Yeah. So I'll keep you posted on our speed runs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when he gets... aren't they doing like a Mario Battle Royale? Is they going to win on that
yet? I was thinking about that. I mean, I think it would overwhelm him, but I have played that a few times. It's hectic.
Yeah, that would be wild.
But yeah, check us out on Toddler Twitch TV.
Oh my God, dude, we should start a business.
Oh, no one will ever hear this episode.
Mr. Businessman here.
But yeah, anyway, so that's what I've been doing a lot this week, and which means I have not been playing too many Halloween themed games because it's already a hard enough task to convince him, yes, that he's not scared of like the cartoonish dragon that's in Captain Toad's treasure tracker.
Well, thank you for the segue. You're right. My bad. I forgot we were ostensibly here to also talk about spoopy games a little bit. So I've been playing this game called Phasmophobia, which I assume is a word for fear of phantasms.
I would imagine fear of ghosts or something like that.
Yes. This is a game by Kinetic Studios. They're an independent game studio out of the UK. And it is an early access game. And it is very obviously early access. It is a little buggy. It does not look great. It's not perfect by any means. But it is a very fun, very enjoyable, up to four player co-op haunting investigation game. So if you have ever seen those shows, those terrible shows, where people go into like a school or, you know,
a lot of night vision.
Yeah, they turn off all the lights for no fucking reason, right? They put on night vision goggles, they get out a bunch of like AM/FM radios and turn them to like the static channel, right? It's like they, you know, they scroll back past the mariachi music onto the ghost band, I guess.
Ghost channel.
Right. And they're like, if you hear me, show us a sign. Who killed you? You like stuff like that, right? You were that. However, the ghosts are very much real and terrifying as fuck, and you will shit yourself playing this video game. So there's a couple of cool things about this game. So essentially, the way that every round works is you go to a house or location, maybe a farmhouse, a school, an insane asylum, and you come in a truck and you have a bunch of tools in your truck. And some of those tools will help you identify what type of ghost it is. And your primary objective during every mission is just identify the kind of ghost. And different ghosts, like djinn, spirits, phantoms, wraiths.
Oh, so remnants. Classic, you know, kind of, this is like classic Dan Aykroyd level spiritualism.
Yes,
here.
Very, like Oni are in there, you know, yokai, I don't know. Huh. So each of these types of ghosts can be measured, or you can collect evidence for them in different ways. One of them might be ghost writing. So if you lay a book in a room and the ghost is active while the book is there, they might write something on your book. That is
just like Ghostwriter.
Just like Ghostwriter. So that is a piece of evidence that only aligns with certain ghosts. Other ones are talking on the spirit box, which is your AM/FM radio, getting an electromagnetic field reading of 5 or greater, causing a room to drop below freezing temperatures, that kind of thing. So you basically need to collect 3 of them to identify what type of ghost it is. However, while you are in that space, there's a countdown clock. And after 5 minutes, the setup round is over. And that's when, depending on the type of ghost, the sort of true hauntings can begin. Ghosts don't like you in their space, and they will get mad at you. And in fact, when you enter a house, you know the name of the ghost. And the ghost's name might be like, you know, Dorothy Russell or something like that. If you go into the house and talk, the game is using the in-game audio to listen to you at all times. So the ghost will hear what you say. And if you ever say the name, even if it's just to like you and I, if I'm talking to you and I go, man, like, I sure hope we don't find Dorothy in here. She could hear that and get mad and hunt you. And when she hunts you, she cuts your static to your party. Like, you can't speak on the radio to the people in the truck.
Oh.
It locks all the doors. Your flashlight starts to flicker. And she'll just murder you. She'll just kill you. So you have to hide. And she hunts based upon sanity level as well. So there's like a little bit of, you know, there's a dash of, what like is the
Eternal
game?
Eternal Darkness.
Yeah, a dash of Eternal Darkness in there. Or there was another game that used Sanity Meter in a similar way, where when you're in the light, you are not losing sanity. But
what did Amnesia do something?
Amnesia, like yes. Amnesia, the Dark Descent. So there's a dash of those types of games in there, in addition to like almost like a murder mystery detective game. The radio element is such a cool feature because you are always in a scenario where you're talking to the people in your room because it uses location-based audio. But those horrifying moments when like a ghost suddenly appears or... you know, like last night I was playing and one of the objectives was take a picture of a ghost, but the ghost wants to be in a room by themselves, right? So I had to sort of stand really far away from one of my coworkers who I was playing with. And he was in the room with the spirit box being like, if you're there, show us a sign, you know, like speaking to the ghost. And he starts walking up the stairs and the lights start to flicker and I see the ghost right behind him and I'm screaming and I'm like, Jordan, there's a ghost right behind you. And I get my camera out to take a picture because like that was one of the objectives, but I'm in another room and it's like terrifying. And there's all of this elements of feeling like you're in a group it's cooperative, they've got your back, but when shit hits the fan, you are alone. You know, like there's always a risk, because when the ghost goes a hunting, you know, you don't want to be around.
Man. So what is the end result for, like, what is a successful run? Like, how does the round end?
So the dream run is there are always four objectives on a mission, one of which is to identify the ghost. The others could be specific things, like taking a picture of dirty water, which is a ghost activity, or being in the room during a ghost activity, or one of the scariest ones is use a crucifix to prevent the ghost from hunting, right? So you can lay a crucifix on the ground and it prevents the ghost from hunting, but if the cross isn't close enough, it'll just start the hunt wherever. And in order to test that, you tend to have to piss the ghost off. So you'll be like, "Dorothy, come out, you fucking coward," you know, and yelling at the ghost. And then you'll just see it, right? And then you're just like all running. And, you know, there's all kinds of like the normal horror elements. The lights will flicker off and on. There's like circuit breakers in there. You can really like fuck with your friends. When you die, you go into like this ghost world and your friends can no longer hear you. You might be inside talking to people in the van where it's safe on the radio, and the radio uses the in-game audio adds a lot of static, so it sounds like you're talking over walkie-talkies. And you might be talking to your friend, you'll see the lights flicker, you have an activity gauge where you can see, oh, there's a lot of ghost activity right now. It'll spike to 10, so you know like the hunt is on. And then you'll be like, "Scott, are you there? Scott, are you there?" And you're not, because you've been murdered and your body is like lying in a bedroom somewhere, you know? So there's a very cool, almost like reminiscent of something like Alien, you know, like you're all there together, but you have to separate. You have to behave in different ways. Like sometimes I might be going to get something from the car and you're inside the house and you're seeing shit that I don't see. You know, you're seeing the ghost. It's talking to you on the radio. It's saying like, "Die, die, die." It might be breathing on your neck, depending on the type of ghost. And one of the cool features as well, all of the ghosts behave very differently. And, you know, some of them, so for example, you could lay salt on the ground you can use the salt to track the ghost's movements, because you might get a footprint. And so you'll know, well, what is the wandering space of a ghost, or where might they be spawning? So you could like track them, right? But some of the ghosts, like a wraith, doesn't tend to come down. They're always flying around. And so they will never leave footprints. Right. And so each of the ghosts have their own sort of strong suits and their own sort of weaknesses. So you could start to recognize them and think about them. And as you're collecting evidence, it might point you one way or the other, but depending on where it points to you, that changes how you might want to approach, especially when you're getting into the higher difficulty, how you want to approach safely investigating this haunting, right?
Right.
If it's an Oni and it's going to like chase you down and murder you after 5 minutes, if you're alone, or if you spend too much time in the light, that's very important to know, versus like a different type of ghost. So even the act of investigating and learning more is its own sort of goal and rewards. So you can sort of build up the tools that you need to survive. It's a very clever game. And as a horror game, specifically a co-op horror game, I think it's really good. And it's very surprising to me, because I think it's really difficult to make a co-op horror game genuinely horrifying, right?
Right.
It's so easy to say, "Oh, I'm in a group of friends and we're trolling and making fun." And you can do that. But, you know, even in a room with four of us, like, you know, we had a game where, you know, we were trying to figure out what the ghost was. We all turn around and it's just like hovering in the air right in front of us. And we all scream, and, you know, friends screaming and mom screaming, and we're all screaming together. And it's just a strange treat, right? Like, how often do you get the chance to be genuinely scared? Because I think, for the most part, horror games really focus on creating a sense of isolation to make you the most scared. But I don't think Phasmophobia needs you to be alone to have that sense of fear.
Well, and also, I think, I don't think it's a coincidence that there are parallels to Amnesia, or that there's the sanity system, because it feels like every time, most times anyway, that a game breaks through as truly creepy or surprising or scary, it's not about combat. It's actually about the exploration and the dread.
Because there's nothing you can do. You cannot fight the ghost.
Yeah.
One of my favorite elements is the sanity meter. The way that the ghost activity works is it's more likely to attack you or really like show itself the lower sanity you have. And the way that it measures sanity is actually by the average sanity of the people in the house. So if your team's sanity is high, except for one person, there may be times where you're incentivized to be like, look, we need to get this fucking ghost on camera. So I'm sorry, Jim, but you're going to have to go into that house alone. We got you covered, though. I set up cameras. We're watching from the van. You'll be fine. Don't worry. We got you covered. And then they just have to go in and, like, you know, be alone, right, turn off all the lights, and then intentionally taunt the ghost. And, you know, inevitably it's like the new guy and they die or whatever. But that itself is kind of like, there's this fun oscillation between being inside the house and being genuinely scared to being like empowered with your team to then just being trolling and fucking yes. around with a group of friends. And that flow between them is really cool. And the other thing too, like I said, this game is in early access. And I don't generally play early access games. Mm. I think for the most part, I'd rather just play a game when it's done.
Yeah.
But for multiplayer games in particular, and a game like this, I'm actually really excited to be playing a game that will be evolving over time. Mm-hmm. Because there's so clearly so many opportunities to improve and grow upon the game. Not just right. even in terms of maps or new ghosts, but new functionality. Like, what are different items that you can use in the game? Or yeah. what if when I'm dead, I could speak to my living players on the walkie-talkie, right? Like yeah. I'm acting as a ghost itself, right? There's all of these crazy ways, because it's building upon years and years, not just of horror video games, but like horror cinema and haunting cinema, that I think the depths that they could take this game is immense. And it's exciting to think about. You know, I know it's a small team and it's slow going and it's not going to ever be everything to everyone. There's so much ground that they can cover in any direction that it's kind of thrilling just to think about the different directions they can go.
Yeah. I wonder what is the long term of this? Is it to build out some sort of narrative, or is it just to put in more scenarios that are, you know, fun to play through with multiple people, or like what's the end goal for the team?
I haven't seen a roadmap. My guess is the latter. And that's because the game has actually only really picked up recently thanks to Twitch. It's like probably, you know, consistently in the top 20, top 15 games broadcast on Twitch. And just like Fall Guys, just like Among Us, it is a game that is made popular by groups of people being put in bizarre scenarios and just talking and having, you know, a lot of humor and also terror.
It seems good game where you could talk to each other for a while, but then things get serious and then the game is entertaining and then things calm down and you're just kind of like, you know.
Well, and the fact that the ghost is always listening to you, like some ghosts will haunt more if you are active. And one of the ways you are active is by talking. Yeah. And so it naturally sort of, without a custom, you know, integration into Twitch or anything, it builds itself really quite well into a watchable gaming experience. It's been frustrating to me to watch Twitch streamers like not take it seriously, because I'm always like, guys, there's a fucking ghost. We need to, like, you know, the tryhard part of me wants to, you know, coach them in a way. Right. But yeah, I think for the future, it's really just about making sure that they're building out more and more content, more levels, more add-ons, more features, and not bothering with any sort of narrative at all. Because I think that's really what will bring about sort of long-term success on Twitch, at least.
It's funny that this seems, I really love the movie Ghostbusters, and this seems like the like scenes in Ghostbusters that are, you know, Venkman and all those people just like doing the weird investigation side of it versus the combat side of the ghosts, you know, ghost detective versus busting.
Which in my opinion is the best part of Ghostbusters. Yeah. Like, not crossing the streams is not fun. Like, that's not interesting. You're just shooting something. The idea of like, well, what kind of ghost and what does that mean? And we have to adjust our traps. That's cool. That's really interesting. I mean, that is the closest you can get to like fantasy CSI kind of thing. You know, you feel like a detective, but there's like paranormal activity at stake, you know, that's raising the tension.
I'm interested to see how it evolves. Hopefully I'll get a chance to play it at some point, but it's cool that people are taking a swing at something like that, clearly inspired by other things, but, you know, with a good eye towards what makes those things actually spooky and fun.
So if you're a listener and you want to check that out for Halloween, it's like $13 on Steam. So it's very cool.
All right. I think that's pretty much it. Like I said, we've been playing some stuff.
Ghosts and Goombas.
Ghosts and Goombas. We will leave it there for this week. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
ExperiencePoints.net is our haunted house. You can tune in to any ghost radio and listen to our podcast. We're out there on the airwaves.
Any medium can help you astral project into this podcast.
That's absolutely right.
All right, everyone. Until next time, thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.